This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this cold, snowy night. So settle in. We've got you covered for everything you need to know about the world of hockey. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time to talk about the Florida Panthers, the opponent of the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow night, is Harvey Filikov from the Florida Sun Sentinel. He covers the team, so we'll talk to Harvey about our former Southeast Division rivals, a team that, admittedly, you might not be paying as much attention to this year as you had the last couple of years. Joining us at the top of next hour, Craig Button, TSN's draft expert, going to join us to talk about the junior, the World Junior Hockey Championships. Team Canada, the preliminary roster was announced earlier this week, a much smaller roster than we're used to seeing. So we'll talk to Craig about the roster and get his analysis on what's in store for Team Canada with the World Juniors. Not too far away, about 3 weeks, a little more than 3 weeks away, I believe. 3 weeks tomorrow, in fact. Boxing Day, the Christmas tradition, always available on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. I say to my colleagues, Ezra and Richard, gentlemen, good evening to both of you. How's the shoveling? Have you started yet?
I haven't started yet. Yeah, good evening, boys. It's ridiculous out there. I think it's been snowing for the last 48 hours, and traffic is moving at a snail's pace, but I mean, with the weather outside, you know, what better than to talk about hockey, right? I know there was some big Blue Bombers news. Mike O'Shea hired as the head coach, but I love it. The snow doesn't bother me at all. Shoveling, yeah, it sucks a little bit, but, you know, it's December in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
It should be snowing.
Strap on your Illegal Curve toque and get out there.
Yeah. Put a toque on. Put some mitts on. Well, no problem with the snow.
For the record, Ezzy, do you own mitts or a toque?
Well, I was wearing a toque. You saw I had a Winnipeg Jets toque, and actually, I need to buy a pair of mitts. Thanks for the reminder.
The drive, of course, the bad driving only leads to more people listening to the radio, so probably a good thing for us. Unless it was just turned off.
after that intro, you weren't having it. Let's get started with the Jets talk. We'll start with the Jets game Monday night in New York, where the Jets defeated the Rangers. And then, of course, tomorrow night after this road trip, which has not been the most strenuous of road trips that you'll see in the NHL. Only six games over the course of the 2 weeks. The Jets in Miami tomorrow night. Let's start looking back at Monday. 5-2 Jets victory over the New York Rangers. You know, I thought the Jets deserved credit for the first time all year they put away an opponent when, you know, it was 2-2 late in the third period, and then Olli Jokinen scores to make it 3-2, and there's about 7.5 minutes left in that game. And I was impressed that for the first time really that I can think of all year, the Jets then took a stranglehold by getting that fourth goal, getting the 2-goal lead, and then the empty netter to wrap it up too. So they seem to want that game more than New York Rangers, in my opinion.
Yeah, they wanted it. If you look at the game, you know, and what preceded it, that horrible afternoon game against the Philadelphia Flyers, where the Jets had one of their worst performances of the season. It was a good performance. The first period wasn't very good, and Keaton Ellerbe had a really bad mistake in the first period that led to the goal. And I think Keaton Ellerbe has been pretty good in the 4 or so weeks that he's been here, but that goal was unfortunate. But yeah, Drew, they overcame some adversity. I thought Dustin Byfuglien was just incredible in that game, and he really led to the goal by John Albert that you heard at the beginning of the game. And Byfuglien had a chance earlier on in the game, and he hit the post, if you remember that rush that he had. I thought Byfuglien was really good. But, you know, looking at the game as a whole, Richie, and a lot of people before that game saw Chris Thorburn on the second line and John Albert coming in, and they thought, oh boy, this isn't good. Chris Thorburn goes out there, plays on the second line, uses his body. He was making a lot of checks, picks up 2 assists. John Albert, as we know, got that breakaway goal, the second goal that put the Jets ahead there. But I mean, you look at the game as a whole. Yeah, it was a good effort. Slow start, but overall, they won the game. Olli Jokinen, You know, he hasn't been very good as of late, and he came out with a big performance, two goals. Mm-hmm. So you like the game. And again, can you build off that? Can you go into Florida, and can you finish this road trip off strong? Because right now, 3 out of 4 games, the Jets are looking pretty good. You don't want that complacency to come creeping back in. But, you know, right now, all things told, it's been a pretty good road trip. They got to finish it off with a couple of good games now.
Yeah, you know, I was impressed. I thought the second, third period, the Jets really took control. I thought they played as a team. I thought they wanted it. I thought they played a different style than I've seen them play so far. As he talks about complacency in terms of the next few games, I thought complacency within the game has been a problem for them, and it wasn't in that game. A cohesiveness that I hadn't really seen this year. So if you're a Jets fan, you have to be very encouraged by the performance and the way they put it away, as you mentioned, Drew. And you're going into Florida and Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay can't score. No surprise there. And Florida, you know, losing to Ottawa last night, and a team that's clearly on the rebuild. Two great chances to be 5-1 and come home to play one of the best teams in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and you mentioned the 5-1 because it's not only that it's, you know, a possibility at this point in time, but 5-1, you know, 3-1 so far. These next two games, the Jets are clearly the better team than the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning, especially with Tampa Bay's injury problems.
Well, if Stamkos is in there, they're not clearly a better team, but yeah.
Yeah, well, right. I'm saying if Stamkos was healthy, right, then, I mean, then there's an argument to be made. But no Stamkos, no Ryan Malone. I mean, the Jets are the better team than the Tampa Bay Lightning right now. 5-1 isn't just a possibility. The Jets have to want 5-1 and have to go and get 5-1 because it's there for the taking.
The most positive aspect of this road trip to date is 6 goals against in 4 games. So 1.5 goals against,
right,
per game in the first four games of this 6-game road trip, right? The Jets have really tightened up defensively. And you look at the Philadelphia game, and they weren't very good defensively, but still somehow managed to only give up 2 goals. Against the Rangers, Ryan Callahan's goal, if you remember that goal, it was a kind of a garbage goal where he just poked it in. Trouba didn't really have a chance. Pavlik was out of position. And you give up 2 goals to the Rangers on the road. All things being told, you're still playing very well defensively. Pavlik has been really good, and he maybe didn't have to steal the game on Monday night, but he was still excellent. And I think they've really shown a commitment to defense. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, the Winnipeg Jets are the best defensive team in the NHL, but I really think that that's a positive sign for the Winnipeg Jets. And Florida, of course, they're a better team. And let's be honest, Florida isn't better than many teams. You might be able to find one or two teams, if that, that the Florida Panthers are better than. Maybe the Sabres is one team that is in a rebuild right now. But Florida Panthers have lots of talent. They're not going to be a pushover. So you have to go in there and you have to have a better start. And we've said that, I mean, for 3 years, really. But especially this year, because the Jets have had bad starts. So you got to go in there, take the crowd out of it. Whatever crowd there might be, that 1,100 people that are there, but you know, it's positive. This is we talked about this before the road trip started, guys, that this is an opportunity for the Jets to stay relevant in the Western Conference playoff race. Because Richie, the Jets could come back 5 out of 6 wins on the road and really not make up that much space in the standings, really, if you think about it. There's still 6 points out of that 8th place in the Western Conference standings, right? I think it's 6 points right now. So you have to win 5 of 6 just to really keep yourself in it, right?
Well, the Jets' record right now is 13-12-4, and I'm looking at that as not 13-12-4, but I'm looking at that as 13-16. Forget the bonus point that you get. That's 13 wins, 16 losses, and 29 games. To me, the Jets' next goal has to be, I mean, we know the cliche, one game at a time and everything else, and that's all fair and true. To me, the Jets' next goal has to be to get that record up to 16-12-4. That's true 500. That's when you've got a 500 winning percentage because you've played 32 games and you've won half of them.
And I think
that has to be the next goal, and then you have to build on that goal
there. And I think it's even more important, Drew, because of the teams that are coming up and the troubles that the Jets have had with those teams. The Jets have had trouble with Colorado, Richie. They've had trouble with St. Louis. The Jets have really been feasting on the Eastern Conference. The record against the Eastern Conference is excellent. I can't really complain about that record. When you've only lost a couple games, what is it, out of 10, 7-2-1 or whatever it is against the Eastern Conference, it's really good. But knowing that you have the St. Louis Blues, a really good team, the Colorado Avalanche, a really good team, Dallas Stars, you know, they've got a couple issues, but they gave the Jets some problems in their first game against the MTS Center. So you really got to not only win those games because you wanted to win 4 or 5 out of those road games, because you know, it's not going to get easier once you get back home.
One thing I want to touch on is that everybody likes to give Claude Noel a lot of flack. You know, everybody likes to say Claude Noel's not doing a great job, Claude Noel this, Claude Noel. He's easy to pick on. You know, he has his flaws like every other coach in the National Hockey League does. But what about going after the team in Philly,
mm-hmm.
right before that game, and him and Ladd going at it a bit, and then arranging for the team, whoever arranged it, for the team to skate at Central Park, and then putting them through their paces at the end of that practice, and some players complaining about it, which I found interesting, got his guys going a bit, and give him credit, because they've come out, and as you mentioned, they've taken care of business against Eastern Conference teams, but he's had them ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could argue the Philly game, it's an early morning game, for both teams, and his team just didn't really show up. But the other games, those are games that they ought to win, but they are winning. And when you're going to blame them for everything when they lose, you better give them credit when they win. And I think he's done a nice job here.
Do you have any problems? I mean, today at practice, there was the... You know, the
love it. I think it's great.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The fight at practice with Stewart and Peluso. I mean, if you played hockey, you haven't gotten a fight at practice, then your blood's not flowing.
Mark Stewart said this himself, and we posted the audio on a Legal Curve. They must have played it. I'm sure Remus and Rick talked about it on the roundtable. Mark Stewart said that stuff happens. It used to happen more often,
mm-hmm.
and that stuff happens all the time. I mean, these guys are professional hockey players, and they're competitive. And if you're doing battle drills, mm-hmm. you better be battling. I don't think he's doing those battle drills just for giggles. He's doing it because he wants them to be ready for a team like the Florida Panthers. And I think Richie's got a good point there. Claude Noel was under fire earlier on in the season, and he should have been. Special teams weren't good, the Jets weren't coming out strong, and he's really started to turn the season around. He hasn't done it yet because the Western Conference is so good. Like you said, the Jets are going to have to go win 5 of 6 games, not just on this road trip. They're going to have to do that a couple times over the next month here to stay relevant in the playoff race, but he deserves a lot of credit. He's turned their fortunes around. He's got them playing harder and more focused.
And I'll tell you about the fight in practice. Coaches, if they're implementing battle drills or trying to keep competitiveness up over a 2 to 3 day span or after a bad performance, whatever it may be, coaches in the back of their minds don't mind if that ends up in a fight, because that means that guys are going hard. And you take an exception to somebody going too hard, or you're the guy going too hard, or whatever it may be, it's a good thing. It means your players are intense and they're engaged in the process. And especially for Claude Noel, who had an issue with them being engaged in the practice a couple days ago, for a fight to result a few days later, is probably smiling ear to ear. And if you've played hockey before, you're likely to have, if not engaged in a fight at practice with a teammate, come close to it if you're a competitive guy. So I think this is good for the team. I think the team is playing more cohesive. And I think this fight actually makes them more cohesive than less cohesive.
We'll find out tomorrow night when the Jets play the Florida Panthers. Still to come on the show, Harvey Filikov of the Florida Sun Sentinel to talk about the Panthers from their perspective. But when we come back, we'll discuss Henrik Lundqvist. He's a very, very wealthy man after signing a contract extension earlier today. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
What's that?
That was an interesting music. There you go. We'll cut Remus some slack. Cut him some slack. He's been working long days today. Blaming the computer. That's okay, Remo.
Statesboro Blues, is that what this is? Yeah.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290.
Almond Brothers?
tsn1290.ca. Yeah.
It's a good musical choice.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
I think they're going to bash me.
The execution was a little lacking, but we'll blame that on the technology, right? Okay, Remus is claiming it's the computer's fault for that, but whatever. New York Rangers re-signed goaltender Henrik Lundqvist. Nice of them not to play him against the Jets, but that's a separate issue altogether.
Well, you know, Henrik Lundqvist, he's obviously signed a 7-year deal we're going to talk about in a second, but if I'm Vigneault, I don't mind, and the fact that the Eastern Conference is pretty poor this year, I don't mind getting him some rest. He's going to be playing Olympics. Like, it's going to be a long season for him.
Right.
And they're going to ride him.
Yeah, well, they have Sweden. To. Oh, Sweden, you mean.
Yeah. Well, and the Rangers, I'm saying. So it's going to be sure. A long year for him. So right. He's got
to,
you know.
Needs to get some nights
off. It means
off.
2 days in a row, 2 games in a row, and so Talbot had been playing well before. I mean, obviously he didn't play very well against the Jets, but so be it.
Yeah. Anyways, Lundqvist signed 7-year contract, $59.5 million, average annual value of $8.5 million. Your initial thoughts on the deal? Any problems with the deal? You right about where you thought it would be? A little bit longer than you expected?
7 years? probably shorter than I expected. I thought he'd tap 8 out of that. That's
really
the max he could get. Considering his age and such. You know what, Drew?
He's 31 years old.
Yeah. A couple of things, and then I'll wait as he get in here in a second. Henrik Lundqvist has clearly been their best player for years and years and years. He takes them, taking them to the conference finals against the Devils. He's taken teams that ought not have gone as far as they did to the playoffs and you know, second round and such. He's athletic. He's great in the community. He's the backbone of that team. And if
handsome.
You're gonna, and if he's handsome, yeah. If you're
well dressed,
if you're gonna
very well dressed,
very well dressed. If you're gonna build a team around, you know, they have some free agents to sign and such. But if you're gonna build a team around Ryan McDonagh, Stahl, and you know, obviously they have to deal with Girardi and Delzotto and such. But around a core, and maybe that's going to change a bit in terms of the style. Obviously, it already has with Vigneault. But you need the backbone of that team to be your goaltender, especially when you're forwards. And as Jets fans watched on Tuesday evening. Certainly,
Monday
evening. Sorry, aren't what necessarily maybe people thought, or aren't what the Rangers thought. So all
and you'll
in
address all, that in
yeah,
the three things you learned later
and,
on.
And all in all, I mean, what happens if they let him go? If they let him go to free agency over money, when you know the cap is going to skyrocket now after this huge TV deal, mm-hmm. plus you know the Rangers will always spend to the top of the cap or as close to it as they want to,
right?
Because they're making money hand over fist. They let him go. I mean, there are goaltenders in the market, and I can see, oh, your rationale, but he's been that good, and you sign him until he's 38 years old. I will say this before Izzy gets in here. I do have some concerns about the way Henrik Lundqvist plays and how he'll play later on in this contract. And I mean, you know, Longwell's long-term deal. Berdur's played late into his, you know, into his 40s now. Thomas late into his 30s. Guys like Hasek for a long time. Henrik Lundqvist, though, plays very far back in his net and relies a great deal on his quickness. So your concern is, hey, it's 35, 36. The quickness goes, and then he's not as effective a goaltender. But the Rangers rather say, hey, I want one of the best goalies in the NHL for the next 4 or 5 years. I'll worry about years 6 and 7 later on.
Right, and that's a good point because Marty Brodeur is a completely different style of goaltender
exactly.
than Henrik Lundqvist. Marty Brodeur, nobody really plays the game like Marty Brodeur, first of all. And uh-huh. you really the really good goalies. Tim Thomas is another guy that has an unorthodox style.
Yeah.
He relies a lot on kind of instincts. And you're right, Richie. That's a good point. You're 31 years old if you're Lundqvist. And I'm not surprised because the Rangers, as far as the contract goes, the Rangers have 7 pending unrestricted free agents. We've talked about this before, and Richie mentioned Delzotto, who will be an RFA, but remember he signed that bridge deal. So Delzotto, is he a big part of your future? There have been rumors that he might get traded.
Vigneault hates him. Well,
right?
He doesn't like him
but
so far.
As far as these 7 pending UFAs, Richie, Benoit Pouliot, Taylor Pyatt, Dominic Moore, Brian Boyle, Strawman, those aren't the key guys. The two guys that are key
no
there.
No offense to Moore and those
the,
guys.
The key guys are Callahan, your captain, obviously, and Dan Girardi, one of the best defensive defensemen in the NHL. So you know that you have 2 huge UFAs coming up.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not surprised because the first guy that you want to lock up is your MVP. And Henrik Lundqvist is your MVP. So we all knew this was coming, and it's absolutely ridiculous that people were mentioning the words goalie controversy. Talbot had a couple of good games. Talbot, guys, wasn't even the backup to start the season. It was Marty Baron.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty Baron retired. Talbot's done a good job. Henrik Lundqvist has been nominated and won the Vezina once, nominated 5 times. Henrik Lundqvist,
yeah.
Sure, of course he's going to get a lot of money, Drew, on the free agency market. But to me, you don't want to let him go anywhere because he instantly makes a team better. He's that good. Lundqvist might be 8-11 in his goals against,
yeah,
the same
whatever.
Percentage might not be that good this year. The Rangers have been a mess. So Lundqvist is still an elite goalie. I mean, I would still put him as a top 3 goalie in the
mm-hmm.
NHL. I really would.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as the contract, Richie mentioned, you know, there might be some health concerns. But as far as the Rangers going forward, you know, Richie, you mentioned the fact that they love to spend as much money as they
yeah.
possibly can. If the salary cap's $80 million, they'll somehow try to spend $81 million.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you got to lock him up. The guys like that, the Lundqvists, the Pekarines, the Brodeurs, the Luongos, those guys just don't come along very often. We see goalies go from really good to really bad and then back to really good. If you want to look at a Steve Mason, a guy like Lundqvist, year after year after
That's
year,
right.
plays 65, 70 games, and he's excellent. So you got to lock him up.
And what they do is the Rangers pay pending UFAs or UFAs. They pay Brad Richards more money than they probably like to. You know, Rick Nash is on a big deal, which he signed with Columbus, I believe. But
yeah.
the point is this. The point is Lundqvist, he gets paid. They're paying him what they believe that he's worth. That's, you know, 7 years, 8.5. That's good market value. By the way, I should qualify that the deal kicks in at 32, so it'll be till he's 39. But they don't pay. The Rangers are one of the few teams in the National Hockey League that actually utilize the RFA status, and by that I mean they're restricted free agents who they retain the rights to match any offers made to them or take to arbitration. They never give in. And that's, you look at the Ryan McDonough contract. Ryan McDonough, somewhat different circumstances than Bogosian, but he's making 4.7. And everybody in the league would take McDonough over Bogosian, with due respect to Bogosian, who's a very good player. They, with Mark Stahl, 3.9, Girardi, 3.3, Delzato, 2.5. We've talked about the way they utilize the RFA status.
So, which means, basically, they use the leverage that they have when they have it.
Exactly. And they pay the veterans, which generally doesn't rock the boat. We've talked about, you know, other teams, you pay some younger guys, you pay guys from outside the organization, and sometimes rocks the boat.
Sure.
Here, they're paying the cornerstone. Won't rock the boat.
Nobody's going to begrudge Henrik Lundqvist of making his money.
And the cap will go up. They will slot him into the cap. Plus, they always seem to get more room than many other teams when it comes to players who are in their RFA year, so more money is generally available to them to spend in other places.
By not overpaying RFAs, right, they have more money to pay their UFAs or any other UFAs that they may want to bring in.
Drew, to further solidify Richie's point, take two guys and two completely different outcomes, okay? P.K. Subban and then Michael Delzato, both two-year bridge contracts, mm-hmm, right? You'd look at P.K. Subban's contract and you'd say, okay, P.K. Subban, he's really going to cash in. And he won the Norris Trophy, and he should cash in. Look at Delzato, he struggled big time.
Yep.
He's been a healthy scratch. He's had a lot of problems in his own end, and I forget what the term was. It was something like $3 million a year, right?
2.55.
And you look at that, and the Rangers really made the smart decision. If you lock up Delzato for 5 or 6 years at a little bit more money, you're saying, ugh, we have McDonough, it's Stahl, and now we have to sign Girardi. Girardi's probably going to want 5 or 6 years. So they did a really good job there, and that's what Richie's saying, if I'm understanding him correctly, yeah, that you really want to be careful to not sign a guy who you're not really sure, because as a defenseman, 22, 23 years old, you're still not really fully where you're going to be.
Well, Tyler Myers showed that in Buffalo. They signed a huge contract.
There you go. A bridge contract would look a lot better right now.
Try and beat Delzato. After his last deal, when Delzato signed his last deal, it was coming off a 41-point season and 10 points in the playoffs. And that's what the deal he got.
Right.
And this time, he's going to go in there. Right now, he's got 5 points in 21 games, or whatever it is.
And he's on his way out. By all accounts, he's on the trade market.
But who knows? But if they take him to arbitration,
sure, he's not going to win. He doesn't have much of a case to hang on.
Depends on what he proposes. But the idea is you have leverage. So what happens, and to Ezzy's point, I guess to my point before, is that if you don't sign to that $5 million deal originally, you have some more money possibly available. And so it leaves you with a little more flexibility. And, of course, the cap going up adds more flexibility.
Are you surprised that the Rangers didn't go with a shorter term and a bigger cap hit?
Well, no, Lundqvist wouldn't have taken it.
He wouldn't have taken 5 years, nope. $50 million?
No.
No? He wanted the years and the guarantee?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think we'd all agree that a team like, let's throw out a team that really needs goaltending, Edmonton, just for the sake of argument, or
The Islanders
not
just down the road.
Pecorine's there, but I mean...
The Islanders just down the road.
Islanders, perfect example. Mm-hmm. That's when you'd probably offer less years and more money, but I think that the Rangers, quite frankly, wanted him for 7 years. Because, I mean, like Richie said, I mean, a goaltender of his quality, I mean, you're not worried about, you know, sure, he might slow down a little bit, but you're not signing him into his mid-40s or anything like that. So it's a good contract. Lundqvist, I picked him to win the Hart Trophy before the season started, so I'm probably a little bit off there, but Richie mentioned it. The guy can steal
when Henrik Lundqvist
multiple playoff
when
series.
When he's your goaltender, you generally speaking, don't worry about your goaltender.
The guy's got a Vezina. He's got an Olympic gold. I mean, come on.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to shift our attention back to the Florida Panthers. We're going to talk to Harvey Fielkov of the Florida Sun Sentinel. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shh.
Shortly past 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to NHL Midweek, he covers the Florida Panthers for the Florida Sun Sentinel, Harvey Filikov. Harvey, good afternoon, good evening, rather, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. What's going on?
Oh, it's we got about 20 centimeters of snow in Winnipeg, so we'd rather be in Miami today, that's for sure.
Well, your boys are having a good time. They've been here all week, 2 days.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I heard they've been frolicking around, and today they almost fought each other at practice. So I guess maybe the heat's getting to them.
Well, you know, if they were in Winnipeg trying to fight each other, they would just freeze. So I don't think it would be as successful. Harvey, we got to start. Got to start with the Panthers. They've made the coaching change, of course, earlier this month, or maybe it was last month at this point in time. Have you noticed a significant difference in play since the coaching change for the Panthers?
Well, I tell you what, yes, but the last two games have kind of changed things. They've almost reverted back to that sloppy play under Kevin the first part of the season. But the first, I want to say, 9 games on Voracek, absolutely more structured, organized, getting in and out of their zones quicker, more tape-to-tape passes, 5 up, 5 back like a hand. He likes to send the defenseman in on offense more than Dineen did. Less 2-on-1 rushes against them. Defense severely and vastly improved. Obviously, with the healthy Tim Thomas, that helped. I think if Kevin Dineen had Tim Thomas for most of the first 16 games, he may still be the coach. Lately, guys, a little bit of regression. The penalty kill is getting really bad. Last 6 games, they've given up at least one PPG, and the power play still sucks. You know, they're right with you guys. I guess you guys are 30th and the Panthers are 28th. But all in all, there's more structure, more organization.
Harvey, what about Alexander Barkov? You know, there's a lot of attention about Seth Jones, Nathan MacKinnon, but how has Barkov acquitted himself so far this year?
Well, very well, guys. They got two rookies as their, you know, number one and number two centers with Bukestad and Barkov. You know, barely 18. This kid has been solid. He's still not, doesn't have a lot of courage when it comes to offense. He's more of a passer. He doesn't want to take many shots. Doesn't quite have that finishing touch yet around the net, but he is a beautiful puck possession guy and passer, and he's tough to move in the corners. Great face-off, gentlemen. This kid is second to Marcel Gotcha on the team. He's way above 500 in his last 10 games, especially since assistant coach Brian Skrudlin and John Madden have come aboard in the coaching shakeup. So this kid is on his way to be a top-ranked centerman in this league.
Harvey, you mentioned Nick Bukestad, a guy that was really good for the University of Minnesota in NCAA, and he's managed to, you know, create a full-time roster spot for himself. You know, Winnipeg Jets fans are going to get to watch the Florida Panthers tomorrow night, and he's one of those centers that you mentioned. Have you been surprised at how well Bukestad has played?
Absolutely. From college to the pros, it's not an easy step, guys. He had a handful of games last year, you know, when he came out of college early. He played 11 games for the Panthers, got a goal in the last game, gave him a little confidence over the summer. This kid was penciled in for San Antonio, the AHL, gets concussion at the end of rookie tournament, and boom, the concussion helped keep him around. Because by the time he was healthy, the Panthers were desperate for offense and a good centerman, and boom, they gave him one chance. They gave him 10 minutes, the next game they gave him 12, and Dale Towns said, he ain't never going to San Antonio. This kid's here to stay. Again, good with the faceoffs, good with the puck, and getting more and more confidence on offense. He had a rush the other day, gentlemen, where he backchecked, stole the puck, and went against 3 guys and beat them all with a backhander, beat Lundqvist on the Rangers with a sweet backhander. This kid, I'm telling you, with Bukestad and Barkov, the future of this team up the middle is solid. They got this kid, Vinny Trocheck, in the minors who's tearing it up. So center-wise, they're solid. That's what Dale Town believes in. But they're still a year or two away from really competing.
You talk about the strength out the middle, Harvey. Of course, yeah, that young core they have is really looking promising for the future, as you mentioned. On the wing, Jonathan Huberdeau, Calder Trophy last year. Great talent, but seems to have struggled. Well, hasn't seemed to. Has struggled this year. Why is that?
Growing pains, absolutely, guys. Occasionally, Jonathan is too fancy with his stick work, his puck handling. And whereas he gets away with it in juniors, doesn't get away with it in the pros. The guys are bullying him off the puck. He's weak in the corners. He's just still not strong enough. He did put on some weight and some muscle in the offseason, but not enough. Lately, they've teamed him with Bukestad, and it's really helped, and Upshaw. And he had a great game last night. Had a goal, could have had a couple more, some beautiful tape-to-tape passes. Now, this kid is just too full of talent to not make it, but he is going through some sophomore growing pains, guys. And I think he's going to come out of it. It would help if he had more skill to work with. So as we go, hopefully he will get that from Dale Town and the Panthers.
You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined on the line by Harvey Filikov. He covers the Florida Panthers for the Florida Sun Sentinel. Harvey, you know, we've seen that the Panthers have already started to make some moves. They traded Christopher Stieg back to the Chicago Blackhawks. Earlier, they put Ryan Whitney on waivers. You know, who do you think is the next veteran to be traded in what is pretty clearly a rebuilding year for the Florida Panthers?
I think it's retooling. It's tweaking. It's not rebuilding, guys. I think that's being exaggerated throughout the Hockey League. The Stieg move was a message, definitely. Christopher Stieg plays to his own drumbeat. He's like that little kid in soccer who will chase the puck wherever the ball is. And he's not a structured, organized player, and that's not how this guy Horacek likes his guys to be. And Dale Town, who loves the kid, he made him rich in Chicago, made him rich here. So that hurt Dale Town to trade with Steve. But I think he was being pushed by Vinny Viola, the new owner, to make a dramatic move, and that's the one he made. Other than that, Dmitry Kulikov is definitely on the trading block. 23 years old, already his fifth year in the NHL. This kid is regressing. He's not progressing. He's just careless with the puck in his own end, in both ends, and he's leading directly to turnovers and goals, and he's killing the Panthers right now. He got benched the other night against Ottawa. I think he's going to play against you guys, but right now he is on the block, and I think he's got some value. He's got a good offensive game. He had 28 points a few years ago. Injuries have held him back, and right now it's in his head. This kid's not playing with confidence, and he's also looking passionless and without joy out there. So I think he's next to go, because they have a lot of talented defensemen in the minors, like a Petrovic, like a Colby Roback, etc. So I think he may be next on the block, but it's not going to be a major renovation by Dale Town with bad tweets.
Harvey, what do you think? You know, Kulikov has been rumored to be on the block for a while. What do you think the Panthers will be looking for in return for a player like him?
Like everybody's looking for, scoring, forwards that can put the puck in the net. The Panthers do not have a sniper, guys. They don't have it on the power play. I mean, Brad Boyce has been a nice find. They picked him off the garbage heap, basically, on the PTO during the training camp, and he leads the team in goals. And you might remember the guy scored 47 a few years ago.
Yeah.
But other than that, they don't have a sniper, a guy with a shot that can scare people. I always thought it was a mistake when they didn't re-sign Jason Garrison a few years ago. That power play hasn't been the same. And I just hate to say it. That's what they need. They need a wingman that could put the puck in the net. They got rid of the Stieg. I think that hurt a little bit, but that was a message. They got Trocheck waiting in the wings, but the wings aren't here yet. So that's what they want. They need some scoring punch. Right now, they're about 29th in the league, and it's not getting any better.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. You can listen online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Harvey Filikov. He covers the Florida Panthers for the Florida Sun Sentinel.
Harvey, I think you'd agree with this statement because you watch the Florida Panthers, you know, more than anybody. Timmy Thomas has been pretty darn good for the Florida Panthers, and some people are talking about him possibly being on the U.S. Olympic team radar. Do you think Tim Thomas has a shot at making the U.S. Olympic team for 2014 in Sochi?
Absolutely, for several reasons. Ryan Miller in Buffalo are awful. Craig Anderson is slumping until he faced the Panthers the other night. He's 10-1-1 against his former teammates. The American goalies are all struggling. Other than Bishop's making a play for a berth on that team. Timmy Thomas, as soon as he got healthy, kept him in every game, like Tim Thomas has done for years with the Bruins. He's doing it again with the Panthers. He's had a couple of sloppy games in the last few that has kind of hurt his GAA. But overall, it's still Tim Thomas, guys. He keeps the puck out of the net. He does it ugly. He's flopping around like a fish. But he can only help the Olympic team in February. As a backup, as a starter, his work ethic, his competitiveness, the guy hates being scored upon even in practice. So I guarantee you Tim Thomas is going to be one of three goalies on that team.
Harvey, we'll let you go on this last question. As most hockey fans know, the Florida Panthers got a new owner earlier this year. You mentioned him earlier. Vinny Viola bought the team sort of at the end of September, right before the season started. You know, and what do you think the impact has been so far of the new ownership group? And is there a renewed sense of optimism surrounding the franchise?
Absolutely, guys. You got a guy with deep pockets, this Jersey billionaire. He buys a team for his family, basically. His 25-year-old son, Travis, loves hockey, and he made him assistant to Dale Talon already in personnel procurement. Recently hired a social media, it's his co-owner's niece. So he bought this team for his family. It's nice to have a rich daddy. We all want one. The only impact so far has been, you know, incurring half of Chris Rusteig's contract. You know, he got rid of him, and the Panthers are paying half the salary to help the Blackhawks along there in the salary cap. Other than that, I think the spending spree is going to happen in the off season. Dale Town will be given just a bottomless pit. The vault will be open, and the free agents, I think, will want to come to South Florida. Brian Campbell and the boys, Fleischman and those guys came a few years ago, and they made the playoffs. It was a very rosy situation. It's not bad playing golf in February during that Olympic break, which some of these guys will be doing. You know what it's like in Winnipeg right now. So I believe it's only good for the Panthers that this rich guy, he wants his family to succeed in life. He's got unlimited wealth, and he's going to be spending come summertime.
Harvey Filikov covers the Florida Panthers for the Florida Sun Sentinel. Harvey, thanks very much for joining us this evening, and enjoy the Jets-Panthers game tomorrow night.
My pleasure. And by the way, it's Harvey Filikov, but I commend you. Commend you for the effort. Next time we'll get it.
My apologies for that.
I only called you Harley twice, so.
My apologies there, Harvey. Thanks very much.
Just call me Harvey next time.
Okay, I'll just call you Harvey from now on. Thanks very much.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Harvey Filikov. Filikov.
Drew, it's a hard name to pronounce.
It's a hard name to pronounce. Certain names, for whatever reason, I have trouble with, and that's one of them.
A lot of people say Drew Mandel for some reason.
Mindel. They say Mindel.
Or Mindel. It's clear that it's Mindel.
Well, for
because
years.
If there's two L's,
yeah,
you stress the L, and there's no A, so I don't. Maybe they're getting you confused with Howie Mandel. I get a lot of Urza.
Urza?
A lot of people in emails, maybe because of the E-Z-R, the two vowels, I don't know. But my name is only four letters, right? So
there's no silent Q in Ezra?
I'm hoping nobody calls Richie Ricard.
You know, I just didn't realize that the A was before the L.
That's what's confusing reading, about
Michael.
The name.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Filikov. Anyways, big thank you to Harvey Filikov.
Good guy.
From the Florida Sun Sentinel for just joining us. In case you missed any of that, it will be available on TSN1290.ca and on IllegalCurve.com. Or you can just subscribe to Illegal Curve on iTunes and get it sent to you each and every week. I want to spend a couple minutes talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs up before Craig Button joins us at the top of the hour. The Toronto Maple Leafs struggling as of late. They've lost five games in a row. And if you've been following along at all online, you know, online, on social media, that sort of thing, the Toronto Maple Leafs are a true case study in those who subscribe to sort of the what's called the advanced stats, the fancy stats, as Rick Ralph likes to call them, and those who subscribe to, you know, I guess the previous ways of thinking about hockey in terms of performance prediction. The advanced stats people would say that the Toronto Maple Leafs are, when they were playing especially well, were doing so by smoke and mirrors. And they would have said last year when they made the playoffs after doing well that it was by smoke and mirrors, and that had it been a full season last year, they would have regressed.
Right.
Because their numbers...
I don't agree with any of that.
Please go.
Because, I mean, the old-fashioned way was the old-fashioned way to get have the other team have the puck all the time and get outshot by 10 shots a game. No, that's not the old-fashioned way. You're talking about wins and losses. Who thought... Nobody thought that Jonathan Bernier is going to play like Patrick Waugh, Dominic Hasek, reborn, even though it's still alive, is going to play like those two guys for the entire season. So I think it's a little bit blown out of proportion, Drew. If you watch the Leafs play on a night-to-night basis, which, you know, even general NHL fans almost get to because they're on TV so often, this is a team that has issues. They have issues, as Rafe Ferraro said in our show on Saturday, on the back end, especially getting that puck up, which is certainly going to serve as leverage for Dion Phaneuf in his upcoming negotiation. Up the middle, Kadri has regressed. You know, obviously, it's sad news about his grandfather, but he hasn't had a great year. They've had injury troubles, with Bozak and Boland. And Boland injury can't be, you know, overlooked because of how important he was.
Clarkson spends the first 10 games, you know, in the press box.
And he can't have... And you know, you talk about the 10 games. Quickly on that, because I think this is part of the problem. He's having trouble developing chemistry right now with those line mates. Do you think those 10 games were a factor? And I know he played in the exhibition games after the suspension. I know he practiced, but it's different playing the games. And his training camp, his beginning of the season with a new team, it's always a hard adjustment, especially when you miss the first 10 games. So there are issues here and that they have to deal with. And, you know, you get to that, back to that whole argument. I don't think it's, you know, nobody thought that they were going to keep playing like they were playing because they just weren't playing well. And they've lost some guys and they have some adjustments and there's some, you know, they're not... They're a fast team, I think, matches up better against some teams than others, like many teams. Very few teams in the NHL match up against every team like Boston, Chicago, and those teams do. Toronto's going to help. Toronto can play a speed game. Toronto can play a certain game, but they're not. You know, those guys aren't fighting as much as they were last year. Maybe not as physical. Some soft. You could argue soft up front. And you're starting to see it. And the fact is, you know, they're right now, you look at the standings, there's no need to panic because the East is just that bad. So they've been allowed, like, look at it, they're 14-11-3, 31 points, they're 2 points out of a playoff spot, Tampa Bay doesn't have Stamkos, and they would qualify as a crossover team. So they haven't played well, but I don't think it's time to absolutely panic.
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you think that the Toronto Maple Leafs are more, I mean, if you talk to the, you know, those who subscribe to advanced stats and who put a lot of weight into that, they would say that the Leafs are at the bottom of the league in things like Corsi and Fenwick, and they would say that the Toronto Maple Leafs should be a bottom of the league team.
Okay, hold on.
As opposed to a middling playoff team where they are now, right, or an upper echelon team where they were, say, 6 weeks ago.
Right, and Drew, it's a fair question, but we've had Gabe Desjardins on the show before. BehindTheNet.ca is a master at advanced stats. I don't think people understand advanced stats, to be honest with you. And I'm not being condescending when I say that. Advanced stats should be a supplement to the analysis of hockey. And when you look, Richie mentioned this, when you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, what's their biggest problem right now? They're bad in their own zone. They're giving up too many shots. The goaltending is excellent. Jonathan Bernier and James Reimer have been excellent. On many nights, they're facing so many shots. I mean, what do you expect the guy to save 45 shots every night? I mean, it's ridiculous. So these advanced stats, people are saying, well, based on the Corsi and the Fenwick, well, when the playoffs start and you get into matchups, it's all about matchups, line changes, defense pairings. Throw that out the window. You get into how many games go to overtime and it's all about, you know, shots and getting traffic and who's the hotter goal?
Well, to that point, as they would have said the same thing last year, and they took the eventual
exactly.
conference.
And I actually thought
4-1 up in the
and the rebuttal
game.
To that from those who subscribe to advanced stats would be, It was only a 48-game season last
year.
If it had been an 82-game season, they would have regressed back more reflective place of where they
and
were.
And I subscribe to advanced stats in the sense that I think it tells you something about a team, about a player. But last time I checked, when two teams play, they're not playing on a spreadsheet. So when a couple of teams are playing, there's a lot of factors. Who's the better goaltender? Who's got the better system? What team is making better use of their shots? Puck possession. I mean, there's all types of things. This obsession with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the advanced stats, and I'm not saying, again, that I don't subscribe to it, because I think they do tell you something. We've brought up stats. Remember, we did a stat about the percentage of goals that players get when the team is behind and the quality of goals. We've done all that. I think it's interesting. And, Moneyball kind of brought this whole thing into professional sports. On-base percentage, that was a revolutionary thing. You can get a lot of value out of a baseball player. For those not familiar, I mean, it was a kind of a stat, little obscure stat, and it was really successful for Billy Beane and the A's, right? But, Richie, this team right now, it just isn't good enough defensively. I mean, Phil Kessel's a premier goal scorer. James Van Riemsdyk has been excellent. Kadri, sure, he hasn't been maybe as good as he was, but he's been pretty good. What does he have, 17 points in 24 games? They have good players. Bozak's been injured. Lupul's injured. They have tons of injuries
that's
right now. The
too,
team maybe
too.
Just
exactly.
isn't performing as well, and they've got all these injury problems. So, and again, I'm not. I know you're asking a fair question here, because it's not you really that's asking it. We hear about this.
These are the discussions. This is a quote-unquote old school versus new school argument.
And James Myrtle has been writing a lot about this for the Globe and Mail, but it's a little bit overkill to me, because when you look at the biggest problems, you look at guys like Mark Fraser and Paul Ranger, the third pairing for the Leafs, they haven't been good. Paul Ranger, it's a great story. He took a couple years off of hockey, but he's really struggled. Gunnarsson has struggled as well. Phaneuf is really, Phaneuf and Franzen are really the best defensemen on that team. Those are the guys, they miss a guy like Clark MacArthur. So the advanced stats, I guess, sure, they're going to regress to the mean, Rich, but like, it's enough with the advanced stats. They should be 30th because their Fenwick is, I mean, that's my opinion. I think it's a little bit overkill. Last time I checked, it's really about, it's about W's and losses at the end of the day. But again, that's how I feel. I think it's, sometimes I think people don't know what advanced stats are really telling you, because the game is not played on a spreadsheet.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Craig Button of TSN is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
7 p.m., 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter if that's your thing, at Illegal Curve. Facebook if you're sort of old school now, I guess. Facebook.com/
I still love Facebook.
We know.
I don't spend as much time, but really, Instagram, like, how much time can you spend? I still spend more time on Facebook. Instagram, you go on there, you go through a couple pictures. So, to me, Facebook should not be considered, a subpar social media. I think Twitter is now the king, but I still think Facebook is better.
What's next, Ezzy?
I don't know.
$1 billion?
Yeah. Snapchat's terrible. I deleted Snapchat. Snapchat's useless.
Are you almost done with this, or
Drew's a bigger Twitter addict than you are, though.
So Snapchat turned down like over $1 billion.
Yeah, like how are they worth $1 billion? Like, Snapchat is nothing.
People have nothing
what
better
is,
to do. That's why
Snapchat's useless. Like, what are you? So Remus, actually, I got to give you credit. Remus got me into Snapchat. Remus is actually very funny on Snapchat. Richard's brother Adam's also funny on Snapchat.
Snapchat is just something to keep you occupied when you're bored.
It's for kids, so
it's
they
just,
can
isn't
tweet
that
each
social
other
media
stupid,
in a
inappropriate.
Nutshell?
That's worth $1 billion. Blows my mind.
It's just another way of texting, and the only reason why it's worth $1 billion is because so many people are using it, and they figure they can make money if they already have all these people using one thing.
What? We know that. That's called business.
Yeah, I know, but you just said, how is it worth $1 billion?
Well, I'm saying, I don't know why people use it.
Because it's a fun way of texting. Why do people use anything on your phone?
We're going to have Craig Button join us in a couple minutes.
If a tree falls in the forest, I mean.
Craig Button's going to join us to talk about the World Juniors in a couple minutes. Before that, I wanted to get your guys' take on the...
I want to talk to the Globe and Mail business reporter over here.
Remus has got an accounting degree.
Yeah.
He knows what he's talking. Yeah. He knows a little perpetuities and annuities and time value of money. I took a little corporate finance.
Balloon mortgage payments.
Yeah.
Oh boy, World Juniors.
Yeah,
the team, the initial roster was announced earlier this week. You know, it's a much smaller roster than Team Canada usually goes with. Usually they go with 33 guys, and then they make some cuts right before the tournament begins.
Yeah.
This time they pretty much said, we got 25 guys. This is going to be, they'll make a cut or two, but this is going to be our roster. Your thoughts on the change in approach and the change in strategy for Team Canada?
Well, I think I like it, because they have too many guys, they have so many of those cuts, and they're, killing these guys' confidence or whatever it may be. Take it seriously beforehand and get the right guys. We'll ask Craig Button about that in a couple minutes here. One thing to note, I think, is they're going pretty young up front and pretty veteran, and I mean like one extra year in terms of draft status on the back end. So that kind of is in line with the way hockey is, right? You want to season your defenseman a little bit more, and your forwards you'll take a little bit more of a risk with that. And they have two guys who are draft eligible this year up front. Sorry, one eligible up front is Sam Reinhart, who's the consensus number one pick this year, and then next year is obviously the next quote unquote Sidney Crosby is Connor McDavid. Yeah,
it's pretty incredible, guys. Because I don't have the stats here, but usually you're talking half a dozen guys, sometimes even more, that are in the NHL, that are on loan in the World Junior Tournament, and this year you have one, Matthew Dumba. One guy who's in the NHL right now, and I think we all talked about this, about a week or two ago, Sean Monahan, he's injured right now, but he's been one of the best players for the Calgary Flames, so why are you going to loan him? There's the injury risk. First of all, because he's not playing right now, but I don't think anybody should be critical of Jay Feaster and the management team for not lending Sean Monahan to Team Canada. I mean, it comes down to development. So whether it's Tom Wilson or Sean Monahan, I mean, these guys have been so good for their NHL teams, they want to keep them up there. So it's exciting.
Barkov's not being lent to Team Barkov Finland. Dale Talon just announced that earlier today.
Well, why would these guys be too good to play? And there's no need for it. Dumba, if you watch the Wild defense, they have a lot of defensemen who can skate and move the puck.
Dumba's been in and out of the lineup anyways.
You look at Jared Spurgeon and Scandella. Those guys can move the puck and such. So a guy like Dumba's going to be in and out of the lineup. He can progress at a slower speed, but I think help his development by going to the World Juniors, and it based on predicament. If Calgary had the center depth of some other teams, like Boston, for example, then you'd see Monahan there as well.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek. He's TSN's draft expert. He covers the World Juniors for TSN, Craig Button. Craig, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure as always. Craig, we were just discussing
first time this year. We always love having Craig on.
Yeah, first time this year, and then it almost becomes a monthly event at that point in time as the Craigslist gets underway and teams fall out of playoff contention and they have to shift their focus to the upcoming entry draft. But before that, of course, the World Juniors start in about 3 weeks or so from tomorrow. And we were just talking before we brought you on about the smaller roster that Team Canada has unveiled this year. Your first question, why do you think they went that route with the small roster?
Well, the main reason is the fact that they went in August and they had a pretty significant training camp, and then they played games against Sweden, against Finland, and against USA in Lake Placid. So it gave Brent Sutter a real good opportunity to spend time with the players, not only in practice, but in games and trying to understand who can play with one another and really trying to see who he feels are the best candidates to go over to Europe and win and compete for the gold medal. And then you add the Subway Series, two games in Quebec, two games in Ontario, two games in Western Canada, and it just further opportunity to assess the players and understand what you're looking for. And I think that once Brent got to that point and got all that intel, I think that he felt that it was better to have a smaller camp than a larger one. And, when you start to think about having a 35-man camp or a 36-man camp, I mean, you're going to go there, you're going to practice, you're not playing any meaningful games. You might have a red-white, you might play a CIS team, but that's not challenging you. And I think Brent wanted to evaluate the players under real challenging conditions and then move forward and form the final roster after exhibition games in Europe. And that's the reason.
Craig, and you look at the omissions. Of course, if you're going to limit the list of players invited, then there's going to be a list of omissions. Max Domi, Darnell Nurse are some of the notable names. Who were you most surprised that was left off the list, and why do you think the names I just mentioned were not invited?
I think that, you know, one of the things we have to keep in mind is that there's 25 players named. Mm-hmm. If there's a 35-man camp, we're not even having this discussion.
Right.
So, I don't want to use the line that is continually trotted out at this point in time. Canada has so much depth and so much talent. Yes, Canada does. But this simply comes down to Brent Sutter knows what he wants, mm-hmm. and Brent Sutter knows who he wants. And that isn't a criticism of the players that weren't invited. This is simply about going into this tournament at this point in time. This is the group of players that he feels best about. And, you know, you can go back and forth and say, well, this guy's better than this guy, but the roles that he wants filled on his team are clear cut. And that's what he's trying to form with his team. He wants to get down to his team and get working with them moving forward. So when December 26th rolls around, they're ready to go and they're ready to roll. And I think that's the simple answer. This isn't about players not being good enough or they didn't perform. These are all good players you mentioned. There's another dozen players that could have easily been invited to a larger camp or could have taken the place of a couple of other players or a couple of the players on this team. But Brent knows, and I want to emphasize, he knows who he wants.
Craig, Jets fans here in Winnipeg were really excited to see that Nick Batan of the Portland Winterhawks and Josh Morrissey of the Prince Albert Raiders, were named to the Team Canada team. And, you know, what kind of impact and what kind of role do you think those two players are going to be expected to play on this team?
Well, I think Josh Morrissey will have a prominent role. You think about what he's capable of doing as a defenseman, not only in the defensive zone, transitioning the puck, defending, which is really important. It's going to be, I think, Brent Sutter's biggest challenge is to how he brings that group of defensemen together and gets them not only to have really good, strong partner play, but to defend and to transition. Josh Morrissey does that. Then you add in the fact that offensively he's outstanding. He'll run the power play. He knows how to jump into the attack and create advantages for the forward group with his smarts and with his skating. Then you add in the physical element that he brings, and opponents better keep their head up. Nick Batan is a dynamic centerman. He's so gifted. He's got a quick mind. He's got quick feet. He's got quick hands. And he's a guy that's always looking to take advantage of the opposition. And, you know, Nick Batan, to me, barring any injury, Nick Batan's going to have a great opportunity to lead the Western Hockey League in scoring again this season. I mean, last year he was in a tie with Brendan Leipzig, and he lost it on goals. But, I mean, he tied. And, you know, unless Mitch Holmberg really jumps out and advances his lead in the scoring race when Nick is away at the World Junior, I think Nick has a great opportunity again to lead the Western Hockey League. But one thing about Nick Batan, don't underestimate him, because Nick Batan's a catalyst for making things happen, and he's been a real successful player on really successful teams.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Craig Button of TSN talking about the World Junior roster that was unveiled earlier this week. Craig, it seems like it's been about, for the last 10 years, everybody's been talking about Connor McDavid as the next big player. He's the next one. He's the next Crosby. He's the next Gretzky. He's the next Lemieux, everything else under the sun. What do you expect to see from Connor McDavid in the World Junior tournament this year?
Well, I think one of the big things is that, you know, with a 25-man roster right now, you know, first of all, Connor McDavid, in my mind, I have no doubt that he can go to that tournament and have a prominent role and be a real strong player. But he's going to have to prove that to Brent Sutter. He's going to have to prove that, you know, strength-wise, he's capable of competing and that he's not going to be a liability defensively. And I don't bring that up because I don't think he is a liability defensively. But he doesn't have to prove it to me. He's got to prove it to Brent Sutter. And, you know, while I believe that Connor McDavid has every great opportunity to be a lock for that team, he's got to go and clear that off for Brent. But if he gets to that tournament, one of the things that I feel about Connor is that he knows what he can do. He knows the competition that he's playing against. And I would expect more, not less, when Connor McDavid is on your team. And I think he'll go and prove to Brent Sutter that he's a guy that's capable of helping Canada compete for a gold. So, you know, despite my unwavering confidence in Connor McDavid to be on that team, he's got some work to do to prove it to Brent Sutter. But that being said, I think he will prove it to him.
You know, Craig, the Olympic goaltending for Team Canada, of course, has been a discussion point in all shows around Canada. Goaltending has been a bit of an issue in past years in the World Junior Championship. Zach Fekale, Jake Patterson are the two invited this year. What do you expect from those two?
I expect stellar goaltending. And, you know, I think a lot of times when you think about, I mean, goaltending gets a lot of focus at times, but, you know, you think back to last year, heading into the semifinal game, Canada was undefeated 4-0. They'd beaten the U.S., mm-hmm. John Gibson. They had beaten the Russians, Andre Vasilevsky. And Malcolm Subban was brilliant. And, you know, Jake McCabe scores two goals early in the game against Canada in the semifinal. I love the way Jake McCabe plays, but I don't think he could score those two goals on 100 shots again.
Yeah.
And, you know, you fall behind, and against a team that was going to be really hard to score on, you fall behind by two, it becomes a real challenge. This year's team, I think, with Zach Fekale in the net, he's a winner. I think the biggest thing about Zach is he understands the situation in the game. He understands when the next goal can't go in. He understands that, you know, there's going to be times during the game when your team's under siege, so to speak, and you got to hold the fort. And he's always been able to do it. I mean, the phrase that I always use when I watch Zach Fekale play is steady as she goes. Now, Jake Patterson, he didn't really get a great opportunity last year, but he's got experience playing at that level. He's been a goaltender that's been a workhorse guy for the Saginaw Spirit and in the OHL. So I think that they got a really good duo. And I think more importantly, they go and play. They get to establish themselves. I mean, Brent Sutter, at the World Junior Tournament in 05, Jeff Glass and Rajon Beauchemin, you know, he felt that those two guys just needed to go into the net and they just don't lose us the game because we've got too good a team. In 06, he rode Justin Pogge. He felt Justin Pogge was a top-end goaltender. Justin Pogge played every game, had three shutouts. So I think for this tournament, it's going to be up to the two guys to go in there and compete. And they don't have to worry about, you know, making the team. They're on the team. And now they just got to get playing beginning on December 26th and then establish who is the guy going forward.
Craig, you mentioned Brent Sutter, and as you know, he's had a lot of success at the World Junior Championships. He's obviously back behind the bench. What do you think the greatest impact of having Brent Sutter back as the head coach of Team Canada is going to be?
I think the greatest impact is that Brent is very clear on the roles the players have to play. And, you know, if you're a scorer, then you got to score. If you're going to check, you have to check. If you're going to be physical, you got to play physical. So that's number one. Number two, very clear on how the team has to play. I mean, for Brent Sutter, when you're talking about what would describe his coaching style, I think it's three things, which are really wrapped in, into two. Be strong along the boards, and then you got to win puck battles at the net. You got to defend at the net, and you got to be able to score at the net. And I think for Brent Sutter, that's going to be the emphasis. We're going to be strong along the boards, and that includes the corners. And then we got to defend at the defensive net, and we got to be hungry at the offensive net. And that's what I think you can expect from Brent Sutter.
You know, Craig, last question before we let you go. I appreciate, of course, you joining us here at Coming Off of Air on TSN. Brent Sutter, on that point, he's coaching the World Juniors. I mean, he's played internationally. He's done basically everything in terms of coaching-wise. But he's coaching the World Juniors in North Dakota and in BC. NHL rinks. Do you think the bigger ice, you talk about board battles, you talk about winning in front of the net, do you think the big ice is a factor in terms of Brent Sutter maybe not having coached there in a long time?
Well, he coached there at the Super Series in Russia. If you recall that series,
yeah.
He was 4-0 in Russia. 4-0. The only two games Brent has lost in his junior career, in the Subway Series and the Super Series and the World Junior, ironically, both games have been played in red gear. He lost the game in regulation and he lost the game in overtime. So, you know, as long as the games aren't in red gear, I like Brent's chance.
Something you would totally expect to be able to say, of course.
Yeah.
Craig Button.
He'll
from
be fine. He understands the game. Yeah. He knows there's nuances to playing on the big rink, but he understands how to take advantage. And he knows what to remind his players of when you are playing on the big rink. And trust me, the European teams play a strong game along the boards and at the net. And, you know, whether it be on the North American size rink or whether it be on the European size rink, Brent understands that. His team will be prepared to do that.
The action gets underway 3 weeks from tomorrow when Germany and Canada meet up on Boxing Day. It's the Christmas tradition. It's the World Junior Hockey Championships. Craig Button, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Take care, Craig. Thanks very much. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to Craig Button for joining us here on NHL Midweek. I got his name right, so I'm one for two this week. I'll try and redeem myself on Saturday. Of course, Saturday we're going to be broadcasting at the at St. Vitale Center.
Yes.
The food hall at St. Vitale Center. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy Mountain Drive. We're always thrilled to be a part of that.
They call the food court the food hall.
That's right. The St. Vitale Center food hall.
Yeah. This year, I think last year... Like,
you called a food coma.
Yeah. No, but I think last year it was like sponsored by Tim Hortons or something. This year, I think what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to try a bunch of the different restaurants because they probably have like a taco time and a lot of things that I like. Maybe some Chinese food. So I really think I'm going to take advantage of all of the little restaurants that they have there.
Sure. Why should this Saturday be any different than any other Saturday?
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, we're going to be down at St. Vitale Center Food Hall Friday and Saturday this week. We're not there Friday, but the station's there Friday. Then it's a whole lineup on Saturday. I think actually the special big show is going to be on before us Saturday morning, and then us, and then H&L, and then, of course, it's a Jets game day. So it'll be certainly a very busy day. So we're looking forward to being down at St. Vitale Center, the food hall there in support of the Christmas Miracle Toy Mountain. So come down and say hello. We promise we will say hello back.
Six
things we learned this week.
Commence countdown.
Six things we learned this week. I'll start with my colleague in the mustard-colored sweater, Richard Pollock.
Does that make you hungry, Drew, or what?
I don't know if that's mustard. That's more...
Mustard when it's in the
seeds. It's more of an earth tone yellow. Yeah. I don't know. Mustard is a little bright. Like if we're talking French, is mustard?
I don't know.
It's Remus's favorite.
Reem, what kind of yellow is Richie's sweater?
It's more mustard in the field than in the bottle, I think.
Right.
Yes, that's fair.
It's orangey yellow.
It's a bit of a Dijon.
Yeah, Dijon, exactly.
You guys, like, I feel like I'm Kramer when Newman's sizing him up.
So if they ask you to put some parsley in your mouth, run away, Richard. Dustin Penner, speaking of a guy who likes to eat, is having a resurgent year in Anaheim.
Well done, Drew.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, you watch him play, and you look at the stat line, where'd this come from? But Dustin Penner, when he signed with Anaheim, guys, you know, he certainly isn't the fastest guy in the world, and everybody knows that. But the thing about Anaheim signing him was Anaheim knew exactly what they were getting. Getzlaff and Perry, who are the leaders of those teams and have been incredible this year, knew what they were getting. 22 points in 23 games. I don't think many people know that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they're talking about it online, but it's... His play, and obviously playing with those guys certainly is helpful. But you watch him. Dustin Penner's always been a smart player, guys. Scored a clutch goal, remember, in the conference finals against Phoenix. He knows where to be. That line isn't a speedy line. But nobody can touch that line in the offensive zone. They're too big, they're too smart, they're too strong, and they want it. And he plays with those two guys. He's benefited. But other guy, you know, Bobby Ryan benefited from playing with those two guys too. But Penner's essentially replaced Ryan's offense at a fraction of the price. Give him credit.
And you can't just say it's because he's playing with Getzlaff and Perry. You still got to be in the right spots.
That's right.
And he's a guy that's physical. And you're right. When that line is going, they're one of the most dominant in the league.
Those guys are playing their way. Like they're playing their way to a point where Team Canada almost can't say no.
Five.
Just to clarify, you meant Getzlaff and Perry, not so much Dustin Penner playing on his way onto Team Canada.
Let's get some pancakes after the show.
Clark MacArthur is quietly having a terrific season for the Ottawa Senators and has become an unlikely first-line contributor for head coach Paul MacLean.
Right. Milan Mihalik has struggled. He's had his usual little mini injury problems. But Clark MacArthur is a two-time 20-goal scorer from the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they're talking in Toronto about how much they miss him. But Clark MacArthur has been excellent. He had a couple of assists last night. But Clark MacArthur is a guy that you don't really notice that much, but he is an extremely effective player, a versatile player. He's been playing a lot on the power play there, but the Ottawa Senators right now have all types of problems on their back end, but Clark MacArthur has been a great signing there. You know, for $3 million, I think it's a pretty good bargain, actually, for a guy like him. He might end up with 60 points again, and he had a 60-point season in Toronto. A lot of people kind of think of him as being more of a defensive player, which he is, but he's been great, and I think you got to give him a lot of credit there. And a lot of guys on the Ottawa Senators, if you want to look at Zibanejad or Konecker, they've had a few good games here and there, but they're younger, and they haven't been as consistent. And for Paul MacLean, MacArthur's been excellent, and I think he's been a nice, pleasant surprise. And as I said, I think they really miss him in Toronto.
2 years, 3.25. I thought it was an overpay. He's been great.
Yeah.
Four.
Richard Pollock, we briefly addressed this earlier. The New York Rangers have a ton of money tied up the middle, but the players are not worth their contracts, and it will hurt the team when it comes to sign their defensemen.
Well, I wouldn't say worth their contracts, Drew, as much as they aren't playing to the value of their contracts thus far. And you could say probably Richard's not worth his contract. But you look at Richards at $6.6 million. You look at Brassard at 3.2. Stepan at 3.07. You have Brian Boyle at 1.7. I mean, he's not going to kill you. But the point is, if you look at that in terms of payment, and then you look at what they've produced. Richards, 20 points in 28 games. Stepan, 19 points in 28 games. Brassard, 12 points in 28 games. Boyle, 6 points in 28 games. Obviously, you're going first through fourth center there. But the idea is, you don't have enough production out of the middle. And you heard Harvey Fialikov talking in the first hour about Florida and their strength at the middle in terms of youngsters. Well, the Rangers, they have young guys here in Stepan and Brassard, and I like Stepan's game. It's offensively limited to an extent. Brassard had flashes last year. Richards just isn't a great skater, and I don't know if they have the right guys to play with him. But if you get that kind of production or lack of production from the middle, you're going to have a hard time in the National Hockey League. And that's exactly what's happening, and especially for a guy like Alain Vigneault, guys. Going from having Sedin and Kessler up the middle to having this center ice corps, it's a different transition for him, and it hasn't been easy.
Yeah, Brassard had that horrible giveaway, which led to Bufflin stealing the puck and giving it to John Albert.
Three.
Ezra Ginsberg, the Anaheim Ducks defenseman Ben Lovejoy has re-energized his career in Anaheim and has taken advantage of the opportunity that has been given to him.
This is why I bring Ben Lovejoy up. Richie and I were watching that game, the Kings and the Ducks last night.
Great game.
And Ben Lovejoy, he's played 20 minutes. He's become a second-pairing defenseman for the Ducks. Ben Lovejoy was a guy who struggled big time. He was in and out of the lineup for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they eventually traded him. I think it was for a fifth rounder. So they basically gave him to the Anaheim Ducks, and the Ducks have all these injuries with Surrey, Sabisa, Boschman's out right now. Ben Lovejoy stepped into the lineup, and he's done a really good job. He's really improved. He was an undrafted guy, and he's been really solid for them. And you don't think of Ben Lovejoy, as being a guy that's playing a prominent role, but he is for the Ducks, and I think he's doing a real good job.
He's doing a great job, Ezra. You're exactly right.
Three.
Hold on, that's not three, is it? That's two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, unbelievable.
It should be two.
Okay, hold on. Let's practice.
He's been sitting there. Remus has been sitting there focusing the whole time. Like, he hasn't been texting away or whatever he's doing.
Hey, Reem, how long were you on the round table? I'm going to bail Reem. You have for 6 hours. Reem's had a long day.
We don't deal with excuses here.
Then I'm not going to say my excuse.
All right, good.
It was a simple matter of counting, also.
Right.
It wasn't a count. I hit the wrong button. I did a no-look pass there,
We love you. Oh, it's all right.
Alexei Yemelin is quietly having a significant impact in Montreal this year, Richard.
Well, people talk about Subban, and P.K. Subban, I think, has certainly played his way onto the Olympic roster, guys.
But he might be in the minority in that opinion, but we'll talk about that another day in time.
Yeah, I think that minority needs to give their head a shake.
Yeah, I think you're out of your mind if you don't think he's on that team. But he's played 8 games so far. No coincidence to have him playing quite well in his 8 games. He adds the physical presence that they need with his ability to do a lot of things that nobody really notices. And obviously, Subban and Markov, puck moving, no question about it. Georges is a leader. But Alexei Yemelin, when he was not in the lineup last year, it made such a difference for their performance against Ottawa. And his addition to this lineup now, he's got his contract extension now, shows you what they think of him. They signed him to the contract extension, not needing to see him play a bunch after he returns. You know, he's going to be making 4.1 a year. There's going to be a lot of value in that deal down the road because this guy can hit, he can move, he plays a nice, solid game, and doesn't get talked about a lot because of the star players they have there, but a huge part of that team.
Type of guy. One. I was going to say, Amelin, you know, they're playing the New Jersey Devils here. He's one of those guys that forwards hate to play against, yep, because he's so good defensively. So it's a good point.
That game available on TSN television. Ezzy will finish six things with a comment on Alex Steen. You say he may be the game-breaking goal scorer the St. Louis Blues have been lacking over the last several years as they attempt to take the next step and become serious Stanley Cup contenders.
For the St. Louis Blues this year, I remember when we had Eric Duhatchik on last year, before last year's playoffs, he picked the St. Louis Blues. I wouldn't be surprised if he picks the Blues again. I think the Blues and the Sharks are going to be those sexy picks that everybody takes this year because they're both playing so well in the Western Conference. But what if you think of the St. Louis Blues, what are they missing? Their defense might be the best in the NHL. Their goaltending combination is unbelievable. And you look at, okay, their team, they score by committee. Alex Steen is having an incredible year. He might score 50 goals this year. He's already got 20. And I don't think, you know, people are talking about him enough. Maybe we are in Winnipeg. But Alex Steen could be that guy that gets those huge goals, whether it's a guy like Dustin Brown who was doing it for the LA Kings or other players, whether it's Patrick Kane or Bickle or all these guys. He's the guy that has that ability. And, you know, TJ Oshie and David Backes can score as well, but Alex Steen is scoring at a pace that he's never scored at before, and I think he might be that guy. So you're going to hear a lot about should the Blues get a guy like Thomas Vanek, and that could be the guy that sets them over the top in their quest for the Cup. But I think if Steen keeps scoring like this, which there's no reason to believe he won't, I think the Blues are serious Cup contenders.
$3.3 million pending UFA.
Yeah. It's going to be a nice payday for Mr. Steen, that's for sure. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Illegal Curve article of the week. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon on this fine station. But we still got another couple segments to go for this fine program. We're going to debut a new segment this week. It's called the Illegal Curve Article of the Week. There's great journalism, of course, being done in regards to the NHL and the hockey world. And sometimes there's articles that just might, you know, if they're not necessarily Jets-related, you might miss one. And this is a great one, so we're hoping to highlight a different article each week for you. This one comes to us courtesy of friend of the show, Adrian Dater in the Denver Post. And it deals with Scott Parker. And Scott Parker, if you recall, was a sort of an enforcer, I think you would say.
No, he was one of the top enforcers.
Yeah, top one of the...
This article, Scott Parker talks about wrapping his hands in chains and punching trees.
Totally so relatable.
He's an enforcer.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott Parker was one of the toughest. Tough as nails, as they say.
Right. And one of the toughest, and he's now going through some tough times because the article deals with his health since he's retired from the NHL. It's been a number of years since he was told that pretty much your career is done. He went to see the doctor. He'd been having some problems. And as we've been hearing so often when it comes to sports nowadays, you know, the NFL especially, but the NHL certainly is not immune. Scott Parker is really, it's a fascinating, enlightening article. It shows you the effect that it can have on somebody as they over the number of concussions they've suffered over his career. And Scott Parker is only 35 years old. And he's got significant short-term memory loss that he says. He thinks he's had probably between 20 to 25 concussions in his hockey career. But the thing that jumps out to me the most, and he's quite open about saying it in the article, is he doesn't regret it for a minute.
No, he doesn't regret it. And by the way, I don't really stress that people read things very often. I'm not a big fan of reading. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, obviously. But this article is incredible. Adrian Dater is one of the best hockey writers out there. But this article, it not only is it well-written, you just got to read about Scott Parker. I think it's really important that you read about these guys because, let's be honest, guys, fighting is on the way out. And I hate to admit it because I am a proponent of fighting. I do think it has a place in the game. But Scott Parker, in the article, talks about a puck that he gets in the eye as being probably more the cause of
the beginning of the end. The
beginning of the end, not the fists, more so the puck in the eye. I think it was 2005.
Yeah, Jim Fahey, actually.
Jim Fahey.
Who I believe used to play for the first Kevin Chevalier with the Chicago Wolves.
Right.
Small
so
world.
A puck in his eye, and that really led to some of his problems. Obviously, the fact that he was a tough guy and he fought also played a huge role in it. But the reason why this is so important, and I told Richie last night after I read it, I told Richie about it. I think the reason why it's so important is because you need to hear these guys' stories, and it's awful that, you know, Scott Parker has to wear sunglasses and all that because he paid the ultimate price. I mean, he stuck up for his teammates, and he does the hard job like a guy like Anthony Peluso or Chris Thorburn does for the Jets, and it's horrible. And, you know, I don't think that what we take from this is necessarily fighting, because if you look at read the article again, and I hope that everybody does.
Hopefully, I tweeted it out on our Twitter feed.
There you go. We tweeted it out, and he says that he thinks that fighting still has a place, and he says that it's the puck in the eye that really that was more responsible for it.
I don't believe that either. I think maybe the puck in the eye was the sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, and then it was that plus all of the concussive hits and punches.
My biggest issue with this, I mean, it's a very interesting article. It's certainly an eye-opener to some extent. But I think, you know, I'm with Ezzy in terms of supporting fighting in hockey, but I've said all along, the idea of the fighter in hockey I don't like. I don't see the place for it. Again, I like the Jerome Iginla, Vinny LeCavalier Stanley Cup final fight. I like, you know, even Andrew Shaw yesterday dropping in with Antoine Roussel. You know, guys like to scrap a little bit, but they're not scrapping every game. They can play a bit.
Right.
If you watch the shootout goal by Roussel, you watch Shaw last year, this year. That kind of fight in the momentum of the game and with emotion at stake, as opposed to they kind of arranged right after the face-off, but they were going at it. The idea is it's a more natural thing, not like I have to fight because I'm a fighter. And Scott Parker admits in the article, as Adrian Dater writes, that, you know, he wished he wasn't pigeonholed to be a fighter early. He was drafted in the first round as a power forward. He says the team, the Avs, I think he was drafted by the Sharks and then the Avs, went into the Avs. The idea, the teams that he was on, those were really good teams in those days, are now, the different courses, didn't need scoring, so he took on a different role.
Right.
But that's my... hockey, at its core, fundamentally, has a problem here. In that, if these teams continue to employ players who only fight, then they are exacerbating this problem.
Sure. Right.
But if they employ players who can play and sometimes fight, even a Thorburn. Thorburn doesn't fight every game.
No.
And Thorburn is not going to score.
He's a second-line scorer now.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea is, you know, a guy who can play, you know, a guy like Sean Thornton drops the gloves and fights, but a guy like Sean Thornton can play, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different thing. There's other guys around the league that like, can drop the gloves, but they can also play. So that you need something like that more so than if you have these guys fighting all the time.
You're talking about getting, I mean, say the word. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, getting the goon out of hockey.
Right. And Scott Parker wasn't a goon, but the
he wasn't when he came into the league, but
he was. You remember Scott Parker was huge.
I think
and
there's
he'd
a difference.
Everybody.
There's a hold on, but I do think there's a difference between enforcer and goon. When Absolutely not. A goon is someone who's cheap and runs around and picks on people, and he's a cheap player. An enforcer is someone who fights because that's what he does. I do think there is a difference. I'm not trying to... That's not the point.
That's a semantic argument, right. But fine. That's fine.
Well, the point is, I think the main point Richie's trying to make is that the enforcer, someone who's really only out there for 3 or 4 minutes just to purely fight, that role really needs to be out of hockey. I agree with that because, again, I don't think... And, you know, stranger things have happened, but I don't think that fighting is going to leave the game of hockey anytime soon. But 10 years from now, I think maybe that's a different story. But the next year or two, I don't think we're going to see no fighting in hockey. I just don't think it'll happen.
If you're going to employ these guys to just fight. I mean, they have to be able to play the game. So if you employ them to just fight, they're going to fight. But on the other hand, let's look at it from the other perspective too. I mean, nobody forces the fighter to fight. The fighter wants to play in the NHL, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the fighter, you know, this is chicken or the egg argument here. But sure. The fighter then comes into the NHL and fight. The player fights because that's his way to make it the NHL, make the big money.
Sure.
Or, you know, very big money.
Well, it's
hold on. So okay. He tries to make the big money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, alternatively, he can try and be a scorer and play in Europe or somewhere else for maybe less money, and maybe outside of from where his family is and all that stuff, but still play the game. So there's a point where you're not forced to. You're putting yourself in that position to keep that job and make $600,000 to $1.2 million a year, $600,000 to $1.2 million a year, but you don't have to do it. So I can see it from both sides, but I just don't see the point of having a guy out there who doesn't really do anything aside from fight. And that's my problem. And the guys like that, John Scott. I mean, what the hell? Have you watched John Scott play? He can't play.
Mm-hmm.
He can hardly skate. He can't skate backwards. Have you seen him try to skate backwards? That kind of guy, I don't know why he's in the league. The other guys, as I mentioned before, I don't have much of an issue with. You know, if a guy like Matt Martin in the Islanders, he's turned. He kills penalties. He does different things.
Right.
That, you know, he's become an important contributor to that team as a guy who can scrap. But some of these teams have these guys who can't do that.
Right.
And then you wonder why they're there.
Right. So the middle ground here, and I can understand why new parents or new fans are saying, you know what, fighting is ridiculous. I think fighting should be abolished. They should not, the referee should not let these guys fight. So in the meantime, let's find some middle ground. Let's work on the spontaneous fight and take out the stage fighting. Let's take that out.
If you do the 10-game fight cap, like 10 fights a season, and then you get suspended, I mean, the guys who are doing the spontaneous fights aren't fighting 10 times a year. I mean, that'll cut down on the goonery if you really want to do that. I don't have an issue with that proposal. I don't have an issue with.
Let's give Scott Parker himself the last word on this, and this is in the Denver Post article written by Adrian Dater. I wish I could have been a more rounded player, said Parker, a first-round draft choice of the Avs, who was pegged to be a power forward. But the teams I played on, there just wasn't quite a need for that kind of player. But me, I just wanted to do my job, and you did whatever you had to do. If that meant hopping over the boards to protect a guy, even though my ears are ringing and my head is blasting with pain, then that's what I had to do. I loved to do my job and miss doing it. And then he follows up and he says, if you were cleared right now and you were able to play again, would you do the same thing? He responds by saying he would. Let's go to break. One more segment. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
New Bruce, Drew.
Have you had any luck in getting him to come to the city yet?
Oh, he hasn't announced the tour yet.
I know, but you know, you're putting out your feelers. You know, you're contacting his representatives.
Yeah.
If anybody knows Richie's a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. We went to go see him in Minneapolis. If Bruce should almost come to Winnipeg just for Richie because he's such a big fan.
Private show?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of Springsteen fans in Winnipeg too. I think it's an inevitability that he's coming.
Well, I think somebody started a Twitter feed just specifically dedicated to getting Springsteen to Winnipeg.
I can't
believe
he's never been here.
Well, believe it. It's the truth of the matter. A quick update from the Roar of the Rings. Jennifer Jones has a 3-1 lead over Rachel Homan after four ends. It's a crucial game. If Jennifer Jones beats Rachel Homan and Chelsea Carey beats Val Sweeting, Jennifer Jones will clinch first place and get an automatic bye into the finals of Saturday's, the women's final Saturday.
Are you going
evening.
To all of it?
I'm going tomorrow night. I'm going to the women's final on Saturday. I'm going to the men's final on Sunday afternoon. And then I'm going to the championship banquet on Sunday night.
Ooh, what are they going to have at the banquet?
I don't know. I thought
you were going to take the going to just go with that. That's such a fastball in the middle.
The weird thing is that when Drew watches curling, he also, you know, cheers along and you know, has all of the sayings as well. When they're you know, saying hurry hard, Drew's also saying it, you know, freeze. Anyways, I think Ron Burgundy was hilarious on TSN, by the way. I think that was a resounding success.
Well, it was a resounding success two ways. One, they got a huge number of people that tuned in for it. Almost 1 million people tuned in for it. And then second of all, so many people were talking about curling that would never normally be talking about curling.
Yeah, no, it's great.
So it was undoubtedly a resounding success.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I really hope Jennifer Jones pulls this off and gets the buy-in. She's been the best women's curler in the country for so many years that the one thing missing from her resume, of course, is...
Drew, is this H&L or is this...
Sorry, you know how much I enjoy curling.
Can we start talking hockey?
How much I enjoy curling.
Yeah.
Just give me a little bit of...
Can we talk a little bit about... Yeah, let's go, Remus.
Okay.
NHL news and notes.
Marty Brodeur comes out earlier today.
Yep.
He said this before, but he reinforced it again earlier today, saying that the Olympic starting job is Roberto Luongo's to lose.
It is.
He thinks it should be Roberto Luongo's job. Do you agree with him?
I don't know if it is. Carey Price,
he's been my boy for the last 3 years, Carey Price.
We talked about this, Richie, with Ray Ferraro.
Mm-hmm.
He said Luongo one game, Price next game, and then you go make the decision after those first two games. I don't know. Marty, Marty knows a lot about the Olympics. He's been there. But
Marty took over for Joseph in 2002. Marty got taken over by Luongo 2010. In terms of that is, I don't mind. I think Carey Price, I've said it for a long time, even when he was struggling, so I'm going to stick with the Carey Price because I think he's the best goalie Canada has. But when you're talking about that seniority and that ability, the goalie plays first game won't necessarily be. This isn't like in 98 where you 100% had your starter. The goalie who plays first game won't necessarily be the starter in the big games, which is down the line. So I don't have an issue if Luongo starts game one. I just think that... I actually think it's a good idea because I think sometimes Luongo's team in front of him, they get a little bit nervous because it depends on how he plays. Carey Price, I think, could go both ways, right? So you see how the team reacts to Luongo game one. In game two with Carey Price, do they just kill it? Because if they do, then you might ride Price. But if Price lets in a bad one, then you don't know. So I don't mind that strategy. For all the talk about Canada's goaltending, and certainly there is some uncertainty about the performance level of those guys, you're talking about still some supremely talented netminders. You're not talking about throwing out a guy who's a fringe NHL guy or fringe NHL starter. You're talking about whether he's a top 10 or a top 15 in front of a very good defense and a very good forward group. I'm concerned about the goaltending, don't get me wrong, but I'm actually less concerned about the goaltending than I am about the left side of the defense.
Sure. Right, and
that's
whether,
my biggest concern.
Whether it's Price, by the way, when I agree with Marty Brodeur, I do think Carey Price ends up taking over this team. But what he's saying is that it's Luongo's job, and because he was the gold medal winning goaltender in Vancouver in 2010, that's why. But I do ultimately think Carey Price takes over that job and becomes the number one goalie for Canada.
Speaking of goaltenders, bad news for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sergei Bobrovsky out 4 to 5 weeks with a groin strain. Is this a lost season for the Blue Jackets at this point?
Well, lost season, unless you're talking about the Edmonton Oilers, it's a guaranteed lost season. The Columbus Blue Jackets, Drew, they have the luxury of playing the Metropolitan Division. And right now, you know how many points they are out of the playoffs?
Probably like
two.
I'm surprised they're even out of the playoffs.
Two. So I don't think it's a lost season. Bobrovsky certainly shocked the world last year with his terrific performance. But I think with the competition that they have with a team like New Jersey who's ahead of them, Carolina... Philly is more talent than these other teams, the Islanders behind them. I don't think it's a lost season. You can't say that. If you look at the Oilers, on the other hand, they're a disaster. Dallas Eakins comes out on the ice
That was incredible.
Skate today, 5 minutes, goes off. But the Oilers, on the other hand, are 16 points back of fourth place in their own division. So their season's done.
Yeah, and Curtis McElhinney, I have my concerns because he wasn't a very good backup with Calgary. So now he's thrust to be a number one goaltender. The drop-off with certain teams, whether it's the Blues or the Senators, isn't as big. But when you're going from Bobrovsky to McElhinney, no offense to him, but he really hasn't even established himself as a very good backup goalie. So I do have concerns, but it's not a lost season. He's out for 4 weeks. He's not out for 16 weeks. So.
And you got a little bit of the couple Christmas Day break there. They can withstand it.
Quickly, a guy who is out for 16 weeks is going to be Stefan Robida, Dallas Stars defenseman. Yeah. Breaks his leg earlier this week. Sort of a strange incident where he just seemed to catch an edge and then slide into the boards. Really big injury for the Dallas Stars, who are sort of thin on defense to begin with.
Yeah, he's been the veteran guy for the Dallas Stars for a decade, essentially. And that's, I haven't seen the incident, Drew, but that's really bad because right now you've got Brendan Dillon and Gonchar. We know that he's lost a step, and the Dallas Stars are in tough, like the Winnipeg Jets, to make the playoffs there. So that's horrible news, and hopefully they can, you know, pick up some of that ice time. But really, Robidaux is a very good defenseman, and he's basically done for the year now. It's unfortunate.
Only effective, right? And he's a good underrated player for his career after he left Montreal. Only right-handed shooting guy they really have on their back end who plays big minutes too. So something to note.
That's it for NHL Midweek for this week here on TSN 1290. Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon, live from the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. Come down, say hello to us. Big thank you to today's guest, Craig Button of TSN, and Harvey Fialkov. Boy, I'm having trouble with that one all day today, of the Florida Sun Sentinel. In case you missed any of the interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on illegalcurve.com. I don't know why that name was a bit bad one for me today. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We thank you for listening. We'll see you Saturday. And if it's Wednesday, it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.